Hi, and welcome to Local 2 Lowdown, the weekly podcast that brings internationals in the Netherlands up to speed on the Dutch headlines that matter, helping you make sense of what's going on in the country. I'm Allard van der Woude, a Dutch investigative journalist, and every Friday morning, I'll be running you through the news stories that are set to shape the country in the months to come. This week, we're starting off with Geert Wilders, the extreme right leader of the largest political party, who appears to be in serious trouble in the polls. After that, we'll talk about a huge data leak which affected 65,000 police officers, which this week was finally attributed to a group of Russian hackers. As always, we've invited a token international who's here to represent all the hopes, fears, and general confusion of the average expat living in the Netherlands. They're here to intervene and ask away as we're running through the news. Importantly, they get to use the Holland Hotline, asking their most pressing question about Dutch society. This week, our esteemed guest is Christo. Welcome, Christo.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Welcome back. You've been here before, but still, let's run through some quick details. Can you tell me where is it you're from?
I'm from Idaho in the US.
Potato country?
Potato country, that's right.
And how long have you been in the Netherlands?
I moved here in 2019.
And what was the reason for you to come over?
I just liked the Netherlands. I was living in New York before and it was, I didn't like the city so much. And Amsterdam offers a better quality of life.
All right. You still think so?
Besides the rain and lack of mountains, sure. Yeah, it's pretty great.
And for this week, you've brought along a question. What is it?
Yeah, what's up with your curse words?
What is up with our curse words?
Which what's up with your curse words? They're really quite focused on a particular topic, and I'm curious about why.
Diseases. Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah, that's what we're talking
about. All right. We'll answer that later on. But first, let's get into the latest news. On Monday, the 26th of May, Geert Wilders called a press conference. Wilders is the leader of the Party for Freedom, the extreme right party that's in the governing coalition. At his press conference, Wilders attacked exactly that coalition, demanding harsher measures against immigration. Political experts broadly agree that this press conference is a rather desperate attempt to stoke conflict for his own benefit, drawing the political debate back onto the topic of immigration, the theme that Wilders tends to dominate. The move is seen as confirmation that Wilders is panicking about losing power, because in recent polls, his party is projected to lose a quarter of its seats compared to its election results, roughly 1.5 years ago. This development is important, as up until a few months ago, Wilders was doing extremely well in the polls, consolidating his power within the coalition. That way, his extreme right-wing politics dominate the cabinet. But since 3 or 4 months, he's on a downward trajectory.
So, let me get this straight. He is on a downward trajectory in the polls. So he went and called a press conference to attack his own coalition?
Yes, correct.
He expects that to help him in the polls?
Yes. The best thing to do is explain why he's going down in the polls in the first place. I spoke to Koen van der Ven, political reporter from the Groene Amsterdammer, about this, who essentially lives in The Hague almost following the political news. And he said that there are two main reasons for Wilders slipping up in the polls. The first one being that he thrives as long as the debate is about immigration and asylum. So that's the key thing for Wilders, because that's the thing he's most profiled on. So voters vote for him if they are most concerned with immigration. If the political debate is about something else and people lose track of the issue of immigration, or at least it becomes less of a priority for them personally, then Wilders doesn't really have that much of a grasp on the electorate anymore. And in recent months, a lot of the political debate has centered on increased military spending, Dutch-Israeli relations, support for Ukraine, agriculture, and a new spring budget, which was announced in April. So over the past few months...
It's an effort of self-preservation. But is it just personal, or is it also about his party?
About his party. And here the situation is that he can completely fully dominate everything that his party does. Now, there's two things that he cares about. He hates Islam and he loves Israel. And if the topic isn't about immigration, like I said, then he doesn't really have any meaningful policy proposals or popular stances on anything.
But I guess my question is it a threat to the coalition that he's in as a whole? Or like, do they not really care if his party declines?
I mean, this depends on political preference. However, this is important because he was doing well in their polls up until recently, as opposed to the other members of the coalition. So all the other members of the coalition were, which is a more or less a very right-wing and two center-right parties, they were doing quite poorly in the polls, which means that if you don't want the coalition to fall, because then there's new elections and you're in a bad spot, people don't really support you. That sort of bad situation is currently unfolding for Wilders, who is losing popularity, which means that if the coalition were to fall now, he's probably going to have to give up a quarter.
The majority of the coalition.
Yeah, he's the by far the biggest party, which means that this development, Geert Wilders both polling badly and doing a desperate move, making a desperate move in order to try to reclaim the topic of immigration, because people sort of associated with him, is quite significant, because it's the first time in this new governing coalition that he's really in trouble. And sort of openly, indirectly confirming that he is. This is quite a desperate attempt, like I said, because he's trying to draw back the topic onto immigration after 3-4 months of focus on something else. Mm-hmm. There's a huge NATO conference coming up, which will draw a lot of attention as well politically. So he's got a small window now, a few weeks trying to sort of make the whole political debate about himself and his own immigration policy again. What we're looking at now, and that's why this development and this sort of silly looking press conference is so important, is because it is the first confirmation that he is weakened, and that if the coalition were to fall now, which, you know, it doesn't seem immediately likely, but if it were to fall now in immediate elections, there would be a chance for him to no longer be the largest party. And for the Netherlands, that is incredibly important news, because currently he is leading a coalition, more or less, with extreme right, you know, Trump-like policies, which are generally not good for the rule of law.
Is there a chance that if his party fell, yeah, could a more liberal coalition form?
I wouldn't be too hopeful about that.
Yeah, is that pretty far-fetched?
But I think even getting a center-right coalition that would be more concerned with constitutional rights, all of that, and effective decision-making, that would be a big step forward. Because it also, Koen van de Ven, whom I spoke about earlier, did in an investigation for the Groen Amsterdammer, together with some other folks, looking at how productive this coalition is. And because of its infighting and because of its high number of inexperienced politicians that are involved, it is just incredibly improductive. So it's the least productive one.
In terms of getting bills passed or something.
Exactly. Yeah. Very little legislation passed. We have multiple crises facing us, so you just need to act fast. Currently, crisis in housing, agriculture, asylum, also, you know, whatever. So you need to act fast. And that's one thing that this coalition really isn't doing, because most of the time they are just fighting, fighting, fighting. One commentator...
Sorry, that's maybe a good thing.
Well, in a way, yeah, you could say. But a lot of people, I saw some folks describe it as a divorce that's waiting to happen, with, in the meanwhile, the house and the family being neglected, you know? Mm-hmm. It's just a bad situation in which nothing is being done, or like nothing is actually being sort of achieved in terms of legislation.
Yeah, we're the children in that analogy.
Yeah, we are. Yeah.
Okay. That sucks.
This episode is brought to you by Vaculi, the Amsterdam-based coffee business with more than a dozen stores across the country, offering specialty-grade coffee for the best price around. Vaculi works directly with small-scale, hand-picked coffee producers and pays them well above market rates for their high-quality beans, sometimes nearly twice as much as major traders would. In addition to paying higher prices, Vaculi is serious about sustainability, taking more and more steps to make sustainable coffee production inseparable from their model. Their efforts in regenerative farming are paying off, improving both the health of the soil and the quality of the coffee. If you want to give their coffee a try, get over to one of Vaculi's many physical stores. Next to the espressos, cappuccinos, and lattes, you'll also find seasonal specialties and cold brew cans to go. I've got a store close to where I live, and I'm there a few times a week. If you haven't given their beans a shot, why don't you head out and try it today? Check out vaculi.com for more information. The Dutch intelligence services have put out a statement this week about a major cyber attack that happened late last year. A group of hackers managed to obtain the work-related contact information of nearly 65,000 employees of the National Police. Now, the Dutch intelligence services have stated that it was a Russian hacking group that was behind the attack. During the hack last year, personal information like names, email addresses, and phone numbers were stolen from police servers. The National Police already indicated that undercover police officers were not in any way registered in the data sets that the hackers managed to steal. do.
What do they want with Dutch national police records?
Unclear. I think a lot of this, I'm in no way a cyber expert, is just seeing what you can get. And data like this, you could probably sell for quite a lot also on the black market. You want to show certain vulnerabilities. The important thing about this is that this hack fits a broader pattern of Russian non-military aggression in the Netherlands. The MIVD, which is the sort of external spy agency active in the Netherlands, which is mostly concerned with like military counterintelligence, that type of stuff, has mentioned in its annual report that last year saw several incidents of Russian groups or Russian-linked groups in the Netherlands against Dutch targets. There was a major cyber attack on what they call critical infrastructure, without specifying what it is, which might be a power grid or a rail network. The Russians allegedly also attacked websites of political parties and public transport companies around the European election. And Russian spies or groups linked to Russian spy agencies have been observed mapping out the infrastructure in the North Sea, which is full of wind farms and their power cables. Also, there's transatlantic internet cables in the North Sea. So there's various targets in the Netherlands. At any rate, the Russians are working hard to attack targets here. Previously, already in 2018, four spies, Russian spies, were arrested in The Hague, close to the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons. Before that, Russian hackers attacked the organization that investigated the downing of the MH17 passenger flight in 2014. And it's also unsurprising that there's a lot of Russian activity in the Netherlands, because it's a good target due to its Rotterdam port being super important to NATO, the International Criminal Courts being here, International Court of Justice, also a lot of nodes in transatlantic internet networks. So it makes sense that the Netherlands is subject to quite a bit of targeting by foreign adversaries. And now, a few assorted headlines that got a lot of attention last week. In our first episode 3 weeks ago, we discussed the upcoming vote within the ultra-conservative Reformed Christian Party, the SGP, on changing their policy to allow for women into national politics. At its party conference last week, the SGP overwhelmingly rejected the proposal. Although a case at the Supreme Court forced the party already to remove legal barriers for women's political participation, the party only allows them at a local level, and only if there's no male candidates. If you're curious about this oddball, anachronistic political party, check out our episode from May 9th, where we explain a little bit more about them. Also in the news last week, a court case started by a collective of Amsterdam's inner city residents. They are suing Amsterdam's local government for failing to uphold the agreement that the number of tourists visiting the city should be capped at 20 million per year. An agreement originally made to keep the city livable. In 2023, Amsterdam already saw more than 24 million tourists in 1 year. So that's 4 million over the supposed cap.
Get them out of here.
Buddy, you're telling me. Further, the Dutch National Railway Service, NS, has announced that they will convert a quarter of its first-class seats in their Sprinter trains to second-class seats. The change could take a few months, and it will add over 3,500 seats for travelers in second class.
I was just thinking about this, because every time I've taken a train here, the first-class cabin is completely empty.
Completely empty.
Yeah. Nobody's taking it.
Yeah. Did you take the train?
I took the train once to Utrecht.
Wow. And lastly, as a little treat, perhaps one of the dumbest bits of news of last week, a 28-year-old Dutch man has sued his university as he finds the grade he got on his thesis too low. The man, who is a counselor for the Liberal Conservative Party, is a student in political science and has a long history of appealing his grades. However, this is the first time he takes to a national court to do so. The verdict is due to come in 6 weeks, and obviously we'll update you as soon as it's out.
Honestly, I have a bit of respect for that, but also just what a phenomenal waste of taxpayer money to be debating this guy's grade.
Yeah.
That is, I mean, obscene.
There should be an English translation of this whole court case, the initial part of the court case, because it's truly some of the most pathetic.
Under what grounds can he do that in a national court?
No clue. We'll dig into it. All All right, and now we arrive at the final section of the show, the Holland Hotline. Christo, you brought along a question. Can you remind us what it is you're wanting to know?
Yeah, just to give you a little context here, the other day I was riding a bike down the bike path with my girlfriend, and we were passing a couple of teen girls on a fat bike. They had to swerve around a pedestrian. They ended up hitting my girlfriend, and then they got into a little argument, and the two girls sped off yelling, "Conquer whore." Why do they say that? How is conquer an insult? It's not even mean.
You don't think it's mean?
I don't know. It's like if I called you a car crash, like it just is a bad thing, but it's not like, doesn't have anything to say about you.
Yeah. It's all not, right. So
I don't know. Doesn't really cut to the core. It seems pretty lame. But then there's all of these other ones that I've heard that are also focused on diseases. And I started to wonder, like, is there a reason why you're historically hyper-focused on diseases?
Why we're so good at this.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. So first of all, it's not fully unique. Supposedly Polish, Hungarian, Korean, and Yiddish also heavily lean on illnesses to wish ill upon people.
Okay, but that is wishing ill upon someone is kind of different. Saying like, get cancer or something, I don't know. Like, well, different than just calling someone
say that.
A cancer whore. Like, what?
Right.
It doesn't even make sense.
All right. Let me start at the beginning. So first of all, the reason why we swear with illnesses so much, there isn't like one conclusive theory for this. So I'm going to sort of
throw them at me.
Do some expectation management. If you look at the sort of full tradition that we have, we use a huge range of historical and old illnesses that used to be endemic in the Netherlands, killed loads of people, and now are mostly in our vocabulary to be some form of expletive. So we say tyfusoi, which means typhoid situation. We say...
You use that as a situation. That was a tyfusoi.
That sucked. It's like okay. Yeah?
It's not an insult to a person.
No. And then you can say krijg de kleren, which means go and get cholera. You can say bokkenwijf, which means a measles woman. You can say teringlaar, which means someone who suffers tuberculosis. All of these are obviously archaic illnesses that nobody of us really suffers anymore.
They are kind of funny, I guess.
And then the one that you said, kankerhoer, is quite a famous one. It means cancer whore. There's a range of theories on why we do this. None of them is conclusive, like I said. Luckily, for anybody interested in the history of why we swear, the way we swear, between the 16th and the early 19th century, Dutch people had a habit of running off to the notary as soon as somebody insulted them. They would go to the notary and have the notary write down, register exactly what the insult was and who called them, where and when.
Are you serious?
Yeah. That is a huge archive of insults that were used across the centuries and kind of show the development of how people swore at one another. The archive shows that illnesses didn't become popular as a swear word until the 19th century, which means that probably as society became more secular, religious insults became less powerful. That's why people switched to the illnesses that at that point affected large parts of the population. You would probably know somebody who had either died of or lost somebody due to typhoid or cholera or whatever. So then it becomes more effective as an insult.
I don't see how that makes it more effective, but
because it's bad, you don't want to associate
it's
something.
Bad, but that doesn't mean that it's an insult. An insult is supposed to be a condemnation of something about you or your character or something.
Mm-mm. Watch and learn, buddy. We don't need that here. We're fine without. One of the things that this stems from is a construction that we use a lot, which is krijg de, which means get the. Get the cholera.
Yeah.
And this is a hugely popular construction for wishing ill on somebody. This was around for quite a while, and probably this helped illnesses become such a popular way of wishing ill upon somebody.
So next time I see those two girls, I should say, krijg de cholera.
Krijg de kleren, I would practice on it, otherwise it doesn't really hit. And this also explains why there's such a wide range of illnesses, because obviously throughout the centuries, different illnesses arose and sort of caused major issues and became the worst thing that could happen to somebody. And cancer also used to be such a strong taboo that people referred to it with just the letter K. So iemand heeft de K, somebody has the K. And because of the weight of the taboo, it works great as a swear word. I know you don't agree, but this is the sort of general consensus. So now that illness has the same sort of oomph to it when you use it as an insult.
Speaking of taboos, is there a curse word for AIDS? There is in the US amongst the youth, but it's more situational saying that's AIDS, which is...
Well, this leads me to probably the most important point of all of this. All of these illnesses, they have a nice sound. So the K, the P, and the T sound.
How do you say AIDS or HIV in Dutch?
AIDS and HIV. So it doesn't sound The K sound in cancer and then the T sound in tearing, all of them have what they call plosives, which are nice sounds if you really, really want to emphasize something you're saying. It sounds far more serious and loud.
Conquer whore.
Exactly. Your words, not mine. We have a lot of them. We have colliere, we have cut, we have conquer, we have ploto, we have different types of swear words. All of them have a lot of Ks in them. They just work well. Does that answer your questions sufficiently?
Yeah, it does. It does. Yeah.
Are there any, do you need any swear words?
I would love a couple. What are the best ones, actually?
Probably the best one that you could go for, which is has nice sounds and it's relatively innocent, but also insulting, is pannekoek. Which means pancake, as you probably know. That's the one I'm going to give you. That's the one I want you to yell at young girls in traffic.
I really can't tell if you're fucking with me or not.
I'm serious.
Yeah, okay, I'll try it. We'll see what happens.
All right, well, you report back how this goes, and then
I'll come back with a black eye.
With that, we've reached the end of today's episode. We'll be back next week on Friday morning with next week's news. In the meantime, feel free to get in touch with us if you have any questions or comments. Visit lowdown.nl to find our socials and contact information. Don't forget to subscribe to our channels and, of course, tell all your pals and colleagues about the podcast. That's it for now. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back Friday morning.